Now we have read in Luke's Gospel, chapter 19, and we're going to follow Jesus, not Jerusalem, as our theme tonight. This book has been used by many of you, I know, over the last few weeks, when it was first suggested to me that we might use this for Lent. I have to say I was dubious, because the Book of Lamentations is not easy reading, and those of you who've persevered with it probably have found that, and this book goes very well with it to explain the contents of the book. If you think of Lent as a time of self-humbling, then it certainly lends itself to that, but I think for some people I've been speaking to, it has been difficult, and I don't know how you found it. Some people have struggled, some people probably have got on very well with it, and possibly one or two have given up, much more so than in other studies that we've done, either in Advent or in Lent, and I'm interested to wonder why that is. Why have we struggled with Lamentations? Because it's part of the Bible. It's coming out of a historical episode in the Bible, which is covered in the Old Testament almost as fully as the coming of Jesus is covered in the New Testament. And that is the leading up to and the actual destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonian forces, and all the reasons for that. And there are several books of the Old Testament that focus very much on that event. So it's part of the Bible history, but if we found it hard going, why would that be? So maybe that's our starting point. Have you found it hard going? I'm not asking for hands up, but have you found it hard going? What have you found hard about it? I mean, have you found it just understanding what's happening hard? The words are fairly plain in Lamentations. Have you found maybe the book difficult to understand or use? I think it's written fairly clearly. What is it that's difficult? I think three reasons come to mind for me that might be difficult. And one is the tendency today for us in society to embrace escapism. And so many people today being troubled with their mental health find that just getting through a day is challenging enough, and adding to the day the Lamentations of Jeremiah might just prove to be a bit too much, in the same way that for some people adding to the day the 6 o'clock news or whatever it happens to be is just, they can't handle it, because there's so much that is grim in Lamentations, and there is so much that is grim on the television, and people choose then to want to live in a happier place, a place that doesn't really engage with suffering and with the troubles of the world to a great extent, because people feel that their own suffering is enough to deal with. And you know, that is a perfectly understandable position for people to take. And maybe you've been in that place, or maybe you are in that place yourself. And sometimes all we can do is deal with the things that are right in front of us. We can't take on the burdens of the world, or even the burdens of the community. We might have to come off things like social media sometimes, just because what we're dealing with ourselves is too much in itself. So escapism. Another possible reason is unfamiliarity, that like it's referring to history, you know, and as some people say, I don't do history, some people say that, you know, maybe studying history at school was your least pleasant experience at school, if it wasn't maths or something else, maybe it was history. History wasn't necessarily the most exciting subject. And this is history. But of course the whole Bible is history. And actually, we probably shouldn't have in our heads any kind of suspicion of or disdain for history, because history's where we've come from. And history's all over Kyle. It's all over our lives. We're old enough to have personal history. And it's the church has history, the nation has history, everything around us has history, the planet itself has history. So sometimes we need to make an effort to deal with history and engage with history, because it's going to benefit us, because we're going to learn from it, because it's going to help us. And the history of this passage of Lamentations, the history of this passage of Lamentations is the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonian forces. And we looked last year in the morning services at Isaiah, so we had a little bit of a footing in that scenario. But I mean, here it is in Jeremiah chapter 6 and verses 6 to 8. This is the history. This is homing in on exactly what's happening in the book of Lamentations. This is what the Lord Almighty says: cut down the trees and build siege ramps against Jerusalem. This city must be punished. It is filled with oppression. As a well pours out its water, so she pours out her wickedness. Violence and destruction resound in her. Her sickness and wounds are ever before me. Take warning, O Jerusalem, or I will turn away from you and make your land desolate so that no one can live in it. So there you have it all laid out for you. God says the city must be punished, and there's still time if they will take warning. But if they don't take warning and the violence and destruction continue, then Babylon will cut down the trees and build siege ramps against Jerusalem, and the land will be desolate. That's what happened. And that is the history. And we're maybe not familiar with that, but you know, that is the actual event that it's all about, and it's living in the aftermath of that. So Lamentations is living, it's like living in the aftermath of a devastating military operation that has laid waste your whole community, your whole city, your whole village, your whole way of life, your own properties, and everything that you've known and has been familiar. And it's like reflecting on what it's like just as that has happened, and working out in Lamentation something perhaps of why it has happened. Okay, there's a third reason as well. I'm actually pretty warm. What about others? I don't know if you want to, someone wants to stick off some of the heaters perhaps, but it is pretty warm, maybe half of them. And the other perhaps reason, I think, is that we have a disconnection with suffering. Suffering is difficult for us if we are not familiar with it. It's difficult for us to identify with. It's harrowing beyond our own personal experience. So when we read it in chapter 1 of Lamentations, Jeremiah says, as though he's the city speaking, "Is it nothing to you, all you who pass by? Look around and see, is any suffering like my suffering that was inflicted on me, that the Lord brought on me in the day of his fierce anger?" So is any suffering like my suffering? Have you ever felt that? Have you ever been in that place in your life? Now, I hope not. And you know, maybe in a sense it would be vain or conceited of us to say something like that. But we may have been in a place where we think, no one around me knows what I'm going through. Nor can they, nor could they enter into the suffering that I'm experiencing. And you may see people in your life sometimes that you think, I just have no idea how they're even surviving each day with the things that they're dealing with in their lives. Because sometimes suffering is just so alien to us. Because for most of life, most of us, hopefully, we live with a low level of suffering. Our lives are fairly comfortable. And we maybe don't have too many concerns or worries around us. Hopefully our health is good. Our financial situation, hopefully, is secure. Maybe it's not, but we know there are certain security blankets in terms of the government's provision, in terms of the community's provision, in terms of our family. And, you know, maybe we don't actually suffer too much. And so when we come to the Lamentations, we think, I don't have any reference to compare with here. I don't know what Jeremiah's talking about here. I've never been in such a bad place. And so sometimes what we do, which is quite the opposite of escapism, is we almost dive into other people's suffering in entertainment terms, usually. We'll watch the most grueling dramas, the most graphic violence or whatever, and we'll watch our news and we'll be glued to, this is the opposite, as I said, of what I was talking about a minute ago, we'll be glued to the gory details of what's coming out of Gaza or whatever. But we let someone else suffer, we let someone else see the suffering and report on the suffering, and we ourselves are comfortable while we engage with it. And I wondered sometimes as I'm reading this book that, you know, Robin Ham, the writer, I know nothing about him at all, but he kept referring the suffering to Jesus. And I was struggling to see that myself, because I thought, no, this is the suffering of the people. And it may be just that, you know, it's so difficult for us, often very comfortable in our lives, to say, well, people, other than Jesus on the cross, people do suffer really, really badly in this world. So let's have another reading. Sorry, I should have. There we go. There's another reading now. 2 Kings 25. This is where we begin to see the suffering of the city of Jerusalem under the siege. And it says, in the ninth year of Zedekiah, he was the king in Jerusalem, the king of Judah, on the 10th day of the 10th month, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, marched against Jerusalem with his whole army. He encamped outside the city and built siege works all around it. The city was kept under siege until the 11th year of King Zedekiah. By the 9th day of the 4th month, the famine in the city had become so severe that there was no food for the people to eat. And that very scenario, of course, is one we're hearing coming out of Gaza just now, and we're being told about other places which are in famine, Ethiopia and so on, where people are suffering like this. So what is the suffering like if you're in a city but there's nothing to eat, and you can't get out because you're under siege by a foreign army that is invincible as far as you're concerned? Here's another passage, slightly longer passage. Right, this is that's where we hope you've got our up-to-date prescription and our glasses here. I'll read it from here. This is 2 Chronicles 36. The Lord, the God of their father, sent word to them through his messengers again and again, because he had pity on his people and on his dwelling place. So there's God warning people. It's coming, the siege of Jerusalem, if you don't turn back to me. But they mocked God's messengers, despised his words, and scoffed at his prophets until the wrath of God was aroused. This went over centuries, remember, not just over a few weeks or something. This was a long developing situation, and the Lord's anger was aroused against his people, and there was no remedy. He brought up against them the king of the Babylonians, who killed their young men with the sword in the sanctuary, and spared neither young man nor young woman, old man or aged. God handed all of them over to Nebuchadnezzar. You see the sufferings implied in there. It's a bit like the words where it says, and they crucified him. It's easy to read. but the reality is something altogether beyond harrowing. And so Nebuchadnezzar carried to Babylon all the articles from the temple of God, both large and small, and the treasures of the Lord's temple and the treasures of the king and his officials. They set fire to God's temple and broke down the wall of Jerusalem. They burned all the palaces and destroyed everything of value there. He carried into exile to Babylon the remnant to escape from the sword, and they became servants to him and his sons until the kingdom of Persia came to power. So we just need to use a little imagination and realize to live in that situation is one in which all the mooring points of your life are being removed, and you're adrift, you're cast adrift in misery. And there's a suffering that is unimaginable. You couldn't have understood it before it happened. And when it is happening, you're writing the Book of Lamentations. That's how bad it is. So going back to Luke chapter 19 on day 25, we actually were reading this passage and reflecting on, I think it was chapter 3. So Jesus, when he approached Jerusalem, let's just read this. He saw the city and he wept over it. And he said, so there's a big crowd listening to me here. He said, if you, Jerusalem, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it's hidden from your eyes. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and the children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you. Now, if you read that passage, having just read the one we just read, can you see the similarities? It's like exactly the same. It's 600 years later, and the people of Jerusalem are being warned by Jesus in exactly the terms the people of Jerusalem were warned by Jeremiah and the prophets 600 years earlier. What Jesus is saying, and what they would have heard because they knew their history, is Jesus is saying, it's about to be like Nebuchadnezzar's day again. It's about to be just what we read in Lamentations. That's what Jesus is saying. Exactly the same. The siege is going to take place. And no one, even the children, are going to be spared. And just as Nebuchadnezzar razed the city's buildings to the ground, that's what's going to happen. And they're sitting there in Jerusalem and they feel very secure in their city. No. That cannot happen. And then he goes into the temple and he begins driving out those who are selling. It is written, he said to them, my house will be a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of robbers. Who is he quoting there? He's quoting Jeremiah. God's people had made God's house, the temple, a den of robbers. They were in the courts, thinking nothing more than about making money out of the worshippers coming to worship. Every day, we can read that ourselves, the rest of that passage. So, they're rejecting Jesus, and there it is, they want to kill Jesus. So again, they're not listening. The prophet has come. He's delivered his message, but he's more than a prophet. He is the new temple. He is the new king in the line of David. And he is the one to bring them back to God, but they're not listening. And Jesus says, what happened in the days of Nebuchadnezzar is going to happen again. He takes it a bit further. Later on that week, he says to his disciples, when you see Jerusalem being surrounded by armies, so this is going to happen in their lifetime, you will know that its desolation is near. The things I was speaking about, earlier in the week, about when I was weeping over Jerusalem, about it being like the days of Nebuchadnezzar, when you see it actually happening, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those in the city get out, and let those in the country not enter the city. For this is the time of punishment and fulfillment of all that has been written. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. There will be great distress in the land and wrath against this people. They will fall by the sword and will be taken as prisoners to all the nations. Jerusalem will be trampled on by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles is fulfilled. So, well, we thought about this morning. Jesus died on the cross, the curtain of the temple was torn, as though God was saying, I'm finished with the temple, but they sewed up the curtain and they carried on and ignored and rejected Jesus. And God gave them 40 years. God gave them a generation to repent. And while many did on the day of Pentecost, and subsequently many priests, and many of the leaders did become followers of Jesus, the bulk of the leadership, the bulk of the city, rejected him. And all this that Jesus prophesied happened. And let me just give you a couple of readings, not from the Bible this time. So this is from the church historian Eusebius. Eusebius is writing about 300 years after the event, using sources that are no longer available to us. But this was fulfilled. Meanwhile, before the war began, says Eusebius, members of the Jerusalem church, did exactly what's said here, were ordered by an oracle given by revelation to those worthy of it to leave the city and settle in a city of Perea called Pella. Here they migrated from Jerusalem, as if once holy men had deserted the royal capital of the Jews and the whole land of Judea, the judgment of God might finally fall on them for their crimes against Christ and his apostles, utterly blotting out all that wicked generation. So there's a historian saying, you know, this actually happened. And if you want to really go into this, then there's a secular historian, a man called Josephus, a Jewish historian, who wrote up the siege of Jerusalem in massive detail. And what he wrote is absolutely horrific to read. It's as bad as Lamentations. He tells what actually happened. He tells about, you know, the whole thing of the Jews actually turned against one another, and there was massacres, and anyone that had food was massacred. Anyone that was hiding food, people were massacred just in case they were hiding food. People were eating one another. This was the Romans. The Romans came against the revolting Jews. They were revolting against the Roman rule. The Romans came, just as the Babylonians had come before. And they did exactly what Nebuchadnezzar had done. Apparently they didn't want to destroy the temple, but it was actually the Jews who inadvertently set it on fire. And the story goes, you probably heard this, that the gold in the temple was melting down between the stones. So the soldiers were pulling apart the temple to get the gold. And they actually completely obliterated all the buildings in Jerusalem. Herod's palace, all the important buildings, they completely and utterly destroyed it. And along the way, they were brutal. Josephus writes, the soldiers, out of rage and hatred, amused themselves by nailing their prisoners in different postures, and so great was their number that space could not be found for the crosses, nor crosses for the bodies. And like I say, if you like that sort of stuff, read Josephus. And you'll say, wait a minute, I've read this before. It's in the Old Testament. It's in the book of Lamentations. It's in Jeremiah. It's in Isaiah. It's in 2 Kings. It's in Chronicles, and so on and so on. Because it's almost exactly the same thing again as Jesus prophesied. So let's just close by asking a question. What does this mean for you and me? Well, unthinkable suffering happens. But it happens for a reason. And so we read in Lamentations, chapter 4, the kings of the earth did not believe, nor did any of the world's people, that enemies and foes could enter the gates of Jerusalem. But it happened. Because of the sins of her prophets and the iniquities of her priests, who shed within her the blood of the righteous. So, we look around our world today, and you know, somehow we don't absorb this, that this happens to people like you and me. It happens to societies. And we just got just a bit too far away from even the Second World War to really remember this, that this happens in the world, and it happens because there's very important. God's in control, and he will not let anyone live in an earthly paradise that omits and rejects Jesus. So we're not secure here in Kyle. We can't say to ourselves, it couldn't happen here, just like in the first verse there. They just couldn't believe it would happen. Well, there's nothing to ensure us against this kind of suffering if our country rejects Jesus. Absolutely nothing at all. And we don't know what's around the corner, and we have to, as individuals, build our house upon the rock that is Jesus. Because that's the only security we have. Especially in a society that every one of us can see has lost its way and has lost its sense of the fear of God, which even those that were unrighteous had in the past. It's lost that. So there, people don't feel accountable. They feel they can do and say whatever they can get away with. And, you know, it was the sins of the prophets and the iniquities of priests that were very much part of why it happened. And when we see false prophecy, when we see people in positions of spiritual authority, but they don't teach Jesus, and they reject Jesus, and they teach something else, some other way to God, then we've got absolutely no reason to feel this can't happen here. Now, I have no idea what's going to happen in 2024, or in the years to come in our country. But I don't think we can make any assumptions at all. And that's why we must not trust Jerusalem. We must trust Jesus. We must not say, this can't happen here. It can happen on a personal level to people. It can happen on the level of a country. And, you know, it could happen on the level of the world. That may sound depressing, but Lamentations happens. Suffering happens. And the only place that we can really be in to face that suffering is the place that Lamentations speaks about. This is our call tonight, and therefore I have hope. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions do not fail. Great is your faithfulness. Now that is the only place where you and I can actually find security in the character of our God. Jesus wept over Jerusalem. He wept for a reason. And the reason for which Jesus wept is a reason that we will all see. Because we will all see everything that we have in this world destroyed on the day of judgment. Even if we are brought back to this world to see it, we will see the destruction of the present society of humankind in order that God may bring in a new heavens and a new earth. And we will see the judgment of the ungodly. Jesus weeps for a reason. And we will all see that reason. And that's why Lamentations is a book that we need. Because it's realistic. It happens. It happened in 587 BC to Jerusalem. It happened in 70 AD. To Jerusalem. And it's happening in other places in the world today. It can happen to us. And our only security is in Jesus Christ, our Lord and our Saviour. And it's in him that you and I must rest. And upon him you and I must build. So let's bow in prayer together now. Let's spend a little bit more time in prayer to think about our world and our society.